the Education Subcommittee of Ways and Means, and we have a quorum. It is Monday, the 13th of February. Tomorrow is Valentine's Day and Oregon's birthday.
Oregon's birthday.
So we're looking forward to that. And why don't you give us a review of what we're doing this morning in 5513. I'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 5513, and it's a little unusual, so.
Okay. All right. Co-Chair Monroe, Co-Chair Smith-Warner, members of the committee. You have before you today the budgets of two boards, the Board of Licensing Professional Counselors and Therapists and the Board of Psychologist Examiners. Just to give you a little background, in October of 2013, due to some staff turnover at both agencies, these two boards entered into an intergovernmental agreement to share resources, including an executive director and an operations policy analyst position. And so that was working out. So in the 2015-17 biennium, with the agreement in place, the boards were instructed by both LFO and DAS to work towards a proposal for merging the 2017-19 budget. So here they are today. The boards have submitted proposals to establish the mental health regulatory agencies to oversee both boards. While they'll be sharing resources and gaining some efficiencies there, they're going to maintain separate advisory boards and services and licensees, as well as revenues and expenditure streams, so that we can make sure that not one board doesn't end up supporting the other. With that, we have the executive director of both boards, Charles J. Hill, and to come up and talk to you, and Anthony Medina will follow him with the governor's budget.
Mr. Hill, welcome. This is called Improved Efficiency in Government.
Good morning. My name is Charles Hill. I'm the executive director of the Board of Psychologist Examiners and the Board of Licensed Professional Counselors and Therapists.
And I'm Larry Felton. I am the operations manager for both boards.
Morning.
Good morning. Chair Monroe and co-chair Smith-Warner. My name is Charles Hill again. What we're here to do is introduce the concept of merging our budgets. So make sure that we're on the correct slide here. Both boards are rooted in consumer protection. BPE was established in 1963, and the Counselors and Therapists Board was established in 1989. The licensees of these boards deliver mental health services to Oregonians, serving some of the most vulnerable populations. The boards strive to protect, provide excellent customer service to licensees through prompt, accurate, and courteous responses. The board also strives to resolve complaints as quickly as possible without sacrificing a complete and thorough investigation. In October of 2013, at the recommendation of the Deputy Chief Operating Officer, Sarah Miller, the boards entered into an interagency agreement where they agreed to share management staff and resources while retaining their identities as separate boards. This pilot project was renewed for the 2015-2017 biennium. 2 years ago, the boards presented the 2015-17 budget along with a report outlining the achievements of the pilot project. The legislature expressed interest in this concept in becoming a more permanent solution during the 2017-19 biennium. The boards were asked to present a plan to ensure ongoing success, and that's what we're presenting today. (Clears throat) So the board's requested a legislative concept, which was introduced as House Bill 2319 to create the Mental Health Regulatory Agency. The Mental Health Regulatory Agency will provide for the administrative and regulatory oversight and centralized services for the two boards. This concept was approved by both boards by vote and has received support from the governor's office and the chief financial office. It will help to improve efficiencies, simplify accounting processes, and streamline operations for the boards, who are seeing an ever-increasing volume of licensees and investigations. The boards protect the public by setting high standards for education, training, and examination, reviewing the qualifications for applicants for licensure, issuing and renewing licenses, responding to consumer complaints, and enforcing the board's laws, rules, and codes of ethics. The board reviews complaints concerning a broad range of issues, including alleged ethical breaches, confidentiality violations, inappropriate relationships with clients, negligence, incompetence, impairment caused by alcohol, drugs, or mental health issues, and then scopes of practice issues as well, and failure to report abuse of vulnerable individuals. The boards work with their assigned assistant attorney general to issue notices and orders for enforcement action, and to consider settlement agreements and to navigate the appeals process.
So this chart displays a total of 6,983 individuals under the two boards' regulation at year-end 2016. Between the two boards, there are 5,737 licensed practitioners, including 1,913 psychologists, 35 psychologist associates, 2,958 LPCs, and 821 LMFTs. There are also 1,246 pre-licensed individuals working towards licensure, including 75 residents and 1,171 registered interns. Psychologists and psychologist residents are doctoral level practitioners, and the others have earned master's degrees.
And I guess we need to get your name on the tape.
Oh, Laurie Felton, operations manager.
Thank you.
This chart displays the volume of new licensees, interns, and residents processed by the boards each year. The number of new LPC and LMFT licenses issued has been increasing by an average of 14.1% per year over the last 10 years. The number of LPC and LMFT interns registered increased by an average of 16.1% per year. Also during this time, the number of psychologist licenses issued each year has increased by an average of 12.2%.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you both. That's an astounding number, 14.1%
right.
a year. Can you give us any insight as to, you know, are there more programs opening? What's driving that?
That's a good question, Co-Chair Smith-Warner. I think it's a variety of problems, issues.
It's a bad thing, necessarily.
No, to say it's any one issue is... I don't think I can define that, but certainly, you know, we've been a warring nation for several years, and we have a lot of military veterans returning with issues, so I would say this is one reason. This is an increased workload on our licensing staff, who must collect and carefully review these individuals' credentials to ensure that they are qualified.
This chart displays the number of complaints received each year by the boards. BPE, which is Board of Psychologist Examiners, has received an average of 66 complaints over the last 6 years. The Board of Licensed Professional Counselors and Therapists number of complaints received has grown from 64 in 2011 to 118 in 2016. This is an average 19% increase per year.
This is another very telling chart as well. This chart displays the counselors and therapists' continued growth with licensing staff. Full-time equivalents has remained static. The number of licenses and internships processed has grown from 546 during the 2017-19 biennium to an expected 1,721 during the 2015-17 biennium. Yet during this time, our permanent licensing staff has remained flat at 1.5 full-time equivalents.
This graphic displays the current organizational structure for the two boards. Each board operates with one executive director, but as we explained under the current pilot project, one of the director positions is being underfilled by a management analyst. That's me. Each board currently has 1.5 FTE permanent licensing staff, 1.5 FTE limited duration licensing staff, 1 FTE permanent compliance staff, which is our investigators, and 0.5 FTE limited duration compliance staff.
This organizational chart is really the one that we're proposing, and it's been the one that we've been operating on since I've been here, since March of 2015. This graphic displays the proposed organizational structure chart under Mental Health Regulatory Agency with just one executive director for both boards.
Question?
Senator Roblin.
So because of the way that chart looks, I'm assuming that your compliance program has investigators. Can they investigate both kinds of complaints? I mean, are they? Can you assign as needed from those three FTE, depending on how many people it is?
Senator Roblin, we do. We have been cross-training our investigators so that they can investigate for both boards. We recently had a long-term investigator retire from the psychology board. So now we're in a position of doing some cross-training and being able to make it so that investigators for both boards can look at cases for both boards.
Go ahead.
So, and then on the licensing side, are your annual licenses, biannual licenses, and are they organized by the start date or do they come in birth date?
Senator Roblin, for the licensed counselors and therapists, it's on an annual birth month renewal. For the psychology board, it's biennial license renewal.
By birth date or by?
By birth date.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Madam Co-Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So also on the staffing rearrangements, so you go from two EDs to one, and you increase from a total staff between compliance and licensing of 7 to 10. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like taking one of the ED spots and turning it into three kind of frontline.
We're hoping to turn two of our limited duration positions into regular permanent positions, and we're also asking for two more of regular FTE.
Okay. And quick follow-up?
Go ahead.
And then also following up on what Senator Roblin asked, is part of the discussion going forward switching so that you do the same cycle of renewals, like having both boards do it that way? Or is part of the point of keeping them separate to kind of, you know, maybe it's just balancing out the workload?
Co-Chair Smith-Warner, my memory is that there is something in statute that prevents us for the licensed professional counselors and therapists board to do biennial. I'm pretty sure somewhere it says annual renewals. I think it would be a good idea, but.
That could be a longer term solution.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
So the Board of Licensed Professional Counselors and Therapists currently collects data and tracks performance and outcome measures in three areas. Number one, the board calculates the percentage of complaints that are presented to the board within 90 days of receipt with a goal of 85%. The board has consistently fell below this goal with 21% in 2016. Please note, though, that this is a much more ambitious goal than the 120-day requirement set by ORS 676.165 sub 4. Number two, at the end of each year, the board sends a customer satisfaction survey to stakeholders who rate their satisfaction in the areas of accuracy, availability of information, expertise, helpfulness, overall satisfaction, and timeliness. For 2016, we saw the results fall in all areas from 2015. However, we have done the 2017 data, which it's always kind of looking backwards, so this is for 2016 numbers. We improved significantly and exceeded our goals in all of the areas. For number three, each board members respond to a survey about board best practices. We have set a high goal that members will find that 100% of best practices are met by the board, and we fell short by 1 point for 2017.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Wisnett.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair.
Representative, excuse me.
whatever.
I demoted him.
Go back to your organizational chart, please. A little slow this morning. It's Monday morning. I'm prior military, and we love organizational charts and FTEs there. I mean, it's easy. I'm back to where I used to live. Do you need approval to do that? You're saying proposed. Your board's or your only approval, is that correct?
Currently, we have a House bill that's proposing. It's a companion to this budget that's proposing the structure.
Oh, I didn't know we had to propose organizations.
Yeah, we'll get into that.
Are you going to get into that more?
We also just renamed one of them to last week on the House bill.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Go ahead.
I didn't know we had to approve the organizational changes. I mean, the total FTEs, you're going up one. Is that correct? The total number of FTEs is going up one. Is it 11?
Three.
Going from 10 to 11?
Representative Winsnett, it's currently we have two limited durations that are going to drop out, and we're also asking for two additional FTE in licensing and compliance staff.
Okay. The follow-up, Mr. Chair. The way I understand it, the licensing program is more administrative. The compliance is investigation. Is that correct?
Correct.
And we're really changing. We're putting a lot of more admin, which is that lower pay. Is that lower pay also?
Not necessarily.
Okay. I'll wait and see. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Kim? Kim's going to help us.
Representative Wisnett, co-chairs, members of the committee. What happened during the last biennium was the legislature approved limited durations positions for the two boards so that they can have a short-term look at their staffing while they're considering the merger. And before you for this budget will be a decision that you make, whether we make these positions permanent or we let them phase out, considering the workload. So that will be during work session, we'll make that recommendation of whether you would like these positions to become permanent or if they phase out.
Thank you very much. In background.
Senator Roblin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess that what I'm hearing is when you go back to your chart that said where you've met your goals, the one that you're having the hardest time with is the 85% in X number of days, which is strictly an issue of do I have enough people doing the work. So if we expect that to get closer to that goal, we're going to need to have people, and that appears to be what the recommendations is looking at. Is that fair?
Sure.
Okay.
Okay. March, go ahead.
On the next one. Okay. So the Board of Psychologist Examiners currently collects data and tracks performance and outcome measures in six areas. Here are the first four of them. Number one, the board surveys residency supervisors and residents to find their opinion on the supervision process as an effective screen for competent, effective, ethical professionals. Our goal is to have 95% of them rate the process as good or excellent. For 2016, we fell just below that goal at 94%. Number two, the board surveys licensure candidates who have taken the Oregon jurisprudence exam. Our goal is to have 90% of them rate the exam as an effective screen for competent and effective ethical professionals. For 2016, we fell below that target at 79%, but we've done the 2017 data already, and that figure has increased to 86%. Number three, the boards track the percentage of continuing education reports submitted by licensees that meet requirements at first review. For 2016, the number was at 43%, which is below our goal of 90%. For number four, each year the board calculates the percent of uncontested consumer complaint investigations completed within 6 months. For 2016, the number was 59%, which is below our goal of 80%.
Senator Roblin.
Sorry about all the questions, but thank you, Mr. Chair. Mine has to do with number two. So are you doing an evaluation as people take these exams to find out where those questions are that are getting it to be less than where you would like it?
Yes, Senator Roblin. We do send the survey, which is a survey link, out to all the exam candidates about a week after they've taken the exam, so it's still fresh in their mind.
And do people who are in the profession, who are not taking the test at a particular time, do they get a chance to look at it and evaluate that as well?
Yes, sir. We actually have a subcommittee of the board. We call it the Education Committee that actually continuously reviews and designs the questions. And we can see how many people pass a certain question to, you know, rate its level of difficulty and so forth.
Perfect. Thank you.
Madam Co-Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have two questions. So my first one is about the number three, the continuing education. There's been some significant drops in that in the last couple of years, clearly. And another board that we've heard from, I just wondered, are you penalizing people? Are you doing financial penalties if you are finding that they are not? And as part of that, and this isn't my second question yet, you know, are you penalizing people, and what, you know, what are you doing to, you know, because when it drops that low, it's often because people think, oh, well, there's no consequence for me not having my CLEs or whatever the equivalent is. So how are you dealing with that?
So Co-Chair Smith-Warner, we actually, this is just on the first review. So when they send in the paperwork, usually you find that they didn't fill out a certain space correctly. It's just on the first review. So usually when it comes around to the end of it, probably 99% of them are fine.
Follow up.
Go ahead.
So, I mean, that might beg to me that, is this really a useful KPM then?
That's a good question.
Okay. Okay. Sorry. And my final one.
Around for a long time.
Yeah. And number four, to me, the percent of uncontested case things that are resolved within 6 months, that is a very different ask than what you're asking of the counseling board of, like, within 90 days, you have it all to the board. This, you know, in the most respectful way possible, this seems like a much easier, well, sure, it's easy to get an uncontested case, you know, moved forward versus having all the investigation and presenting it to the board. Mm-hmm. Those seem like not at all equivalent KPMs. So any comments on kind of, and I'm sure a lot of it is just organizational history of both organizations.
Yeah, and that's exactly it. I think it would be probably something we should review going forward is making sure our KPMs are aligned, because that's part of what this merger process is about, is aligning processes and finding best practices.
And
thank you.
Roland.
Follow up on that question. So when I see those kinds of numbers and not getting as well, do they prioritize the contested ones? So your people and investigators are spending their time on the cases that are more difficult, and therefore the people who aren't contested kind of are at the bottom of the bin?
Senator Roblin, that's not necessarily true.
Okay.
Usually it's our AG that spends the most time on the contested cases once they get to that
okay.
point. And then the investigator supports their work.
Okay.
So here are the last two measures for the Board of Psychologists Examiners. For number five, it's the same as the Counselor's Board. This board surveys stakeholders for customer satisfaction each year in six areas. For 2016, we exceeded the goal of 75% in all areas except for availability of information, where we fell short by 2 points. For 2017, we exceeded the goal in all areas, improving in most areas from the prior year. Number six, also the same as the Counselor's Board. The board surveys board members for best practices. We have consistently met our goal of 100%.
Kim, does LFO compare KPMs from one agency to another so that there's some consistency, or?
Co-Chairman Rowe, members of the committee, when the KPM system was first created, yes, there was some attempt to align them and have some consistency. And as the agencies took ownership of their KPMs, some of the agencies started developing what they thought would be more customized to their board. And so it might behoove us to start taking a look at that again to find some consistency.
It seems like you ought to at least look at it. That isn't to say that they should all be the same, but there ought to be some continuity, I would think.
And they do have some similar, for the most part, there are exact same KPMs across these licensing boards, and then there are some that are a little different, or just the data collecting is a little different for each of the boards.
Okay.
And Co-Chair Monroe, I might add that that's been the problem from my standpoint since I've been the director for both boards, recognizing there's processes and procedures that are completely different for both boards and trying to bring those into alignment. And that's one of the big challenges, and that's why we're proposing this concept.
Okay, good.
So we'll talk about the budget drivers, risk, environmental factors. The funding sources for the agency is 100% other funds from licensing-related fees. The major budget drivers are staffing at 53%, legal fees at 10%, and state government service charges, which are mostly DAS fees, at 9%. The fluctuation in the volume and cost of disciplinary cases can make it challenging to predict the budget items and stay within the budget. In 2016, the AG cost for BPE ranged from $700 to more than $60,000 for one contested case. A single big case can have a major impact on our budget. Another risk in the board's is in the board's limited staffing of 4.5 FTE each, which impacts customer services, particularly during times of increased volume, for example, during college graduation. Staff turnover is very disruptive to board operations. As we discussed in a previous slide, the annual growth of new licensees continues to soar. The number of new licenses and interns each year has more than tripled in the past 10 years for counselors and therapists board. Yet during this time, the board has maintained only 1.5 FTE permanent licensing staff. The number of investigations received by the boards each year reached 184 in 2016, a 33% increase from the 138 received just 5 years prior in 2011. The boards have been utilizing limited duration positions, temporary staff, and overtime work from the current staff in order to meet these growing demands.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Wisner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Kim, the 9% for the DAS service, is that that's across the board, and who determines that? Not who does the governor approve that? Does
Representative Wisnett, members of the committee, I'm going to hand that over to Anthony and answer DAS's state government service charges questions for you.
Co-Chair Smith Warner, Co-Chair Monroe, Representative Wisnett, can you expand on your question just so
I'm assuming the 9% is a blanket charge that DAS has increased all of their service charges 9%. Is that a correct assumption?
Co-Chair Smith Warner, Co-Chair Monroe, Representative Wisnett, that 9% represents increases in DAS charges, but also represents increases in services provided enterprise-wide. So it's DAS, it's Secretary of State, Treasury.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Yes, please.
So who determines that? I don't think cost of services should have gone up 9%.
So, Co-Chair Smith Warner, Co-Chair Monroe, Representative Wisnett. So that's in relation to the entire budget, but each agency determines, and there's state government service charge.
The co-chair from the House. Clear. It's a percentage of their. It's a percentage of their budget. It's not that their cost went up there. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Roblin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do they commingle the fees that come in, or do they stay separate and deal with each one? So yes. If one's short, they're going to have to figure out what to do as opposed to...
No, they're completely separate from revenues and expenditures.
Okay. And Senator Roblin, to follow up on your earlier question on are the investigators cross-trained to work both sides of the fence, they are, but... We keep track of the time so that we are not charging one board for the other board's investigations.
Perfect. Thank you.
When you're merging boards, that's absolutely critical.
Correct.
Tomorrow we're going to hear from an agency that's got, I think, six different boards, something like that, all commingled. Mm-hmm. And that's been a problem with that agency for many years. And we've been working on it, and hopefully it's balanced now. But nobody wants to be paying somebody else's freight.
That's yes, right. Co-Chair Monroe, we're quite aware of that. We work very closely with our accounting folks at DAS to make sure that the structure is appropriately in place.
Good. Okay.
Okay. So So major changes in the past 6 years. During the 2011-13 biennium, Board of Psychologist Examiners experienced significant turnover in its executive director position. Five different directors administered the board during this time, including four interim directors. As discussed, the boards initiated the pilot project for shared management in 2013 and continued that arrangement through the 2015-17 biennium. During 2015-17, the Board of Licensed Professional Counselors and Therapists increased its application fee by $50 and its initial licensure fee by $25. Also, Board of Psychology instituted a temporary fee reduction for a 24-month period.
Now those increases, then what was the total with those increases?
So
you said up 50 and up 25 from what?
So the initial licensure fee went from 100 to 125, okay. And application fee went from 125 to 175.
Thank you. Yeah.
Yes, that's right.
Okay. Senator Roblin.
And just a reminder, they're the annual one, and the other one is the biennial. So
correct.
The counselors pay that every year,
mm-hmm.
And the psychologists pay it once every two years.
Yes, an active psychologist pays $750 every 2 years.
Oh,
and that's
okay. Madam Co-Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And that is down from the $750 because is that after the temporary? Oh no, the renewal fee got reduced.
The renewal fee was reduced, but it's actually back to the normal now.
Okay, mm-hmm. Thank you.
So, continuing on with program improvements, the boards have taken several steps recently to help contain costs and improve programs and services. Our key initiative has been the pilot project, which has led to a more efficient use of resources. We hope to maximize these efficiencies through House Bill 2319. We plan to continue to streamline processes, align the board's policies and procedures, and implement a new database that will allow us to operate even more efficiently through online applications and renewals. Also, the Board of Counselors and Therapists is nearing completion of a major project to overhaul its OARs. So far, it has revised 12 divisions to reorganize and classify rules, wow. Remove redundant and confusing language, and address several problem areas. This has resulted in an 18% reduction in verbiage used. It has also created a new inactive license status, and this work is mostly complete. It has been ongoing for about the last 8 to 9 months.
So major budget information. This chart displays the two boards' legislatively adopted budgets for 2015-17 biennium compared to the total agency request budget and the governor's budget for 2017-19. Note that the revenues and expenditures for each board will remain separated. Board of Licensed Professional Counselors and Therapists, governor's budget totals $2,046,561, and the Board of Psychologist Examiners Governor's budget totals $1,431,947.
So at this point, we'll start talking about the policy option packages that goes along with this concept. The first policy option package is number 100.
Representative Wisnett.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Kim, again to you. In my past work in Ways and Means, the governor's budget meant something. Or are we going to start, so we can try to look for savings and things like that? Are we going to have the co-chairs compared, or how, the plus or minus? I thought our charge is to find $200 million savings or.
Representative Wisnett, members of the committee. Again, this is another funded budget. They receive absolutely no general
funds.
So
there's not much we can do on this.
Yeah, so there is nothing we can bring from the boards.
Except staff.
Another fund sweep.
And speaking of which.
But we review these agency budgets, other funded, to make sure that even though they're other funded, that people's licenses that come in, that they pay, professionals pay, that money is being used properly,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
And efficiently.
Yes, sir.
That's why we get to review it. It's really easy to say, well, that's other funded, so it doesn't matter. It does matter. It matters to the professionals that are paying those license fees every year. that they're getting the service that they need. It matters to the general public that investigations are being properly carried out so that the agencies are meeting people's needs. And so that's why we're doing what we're doing.
I completely agree.
It's different than when we deal with general fund, but it's important.
Yes, sir.
Madam Co-Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. And on that point, this is probably going to come up later, but if you could go back one slide, could you indeed tell us what the what your ending fund balance was or will be for 2015-17? I mean, with that big of a jump and with what you talked about the number of applications increasing so rapidly, I would assume that or wonder that perhaps it was larger than usual.
I know that we do discuss that in one of our next slides, that the Counselor's Board, because of the fee increase of $40, we will end with, I think it's like 4.3 months worth of ending balance.
But I would follow up.
Go ahead.
I would like to get a sense of what your ending balance for 2015-17. Is that in the DAS presentation, Anthony?
I know I have.
Co-Chair Smith-Warner, it is not, but I have the budgeted figures on me.
Okay.
However, with your point where I think you're coming getting at with the increase in 14%, my assumption is you're talking more on actuals versus what's budgeted.
Yes.
And I don't have the actuals in front of me.
Okay. Thank you.
But what's budgeted, I think Lurie has it right in front of
me. But ending fund balance is always critical. Mm-hmm. It's always something that we're very concerned about. We look at a range of say 6 to 8 months as being appropriate. The problem is if the ending balance gets too big, say over a year, we got people in this building that'll sweep that.
That's what I was going to say.
And if it's too low, then you're always in danger of needing fee increases or whatever. You're in danger of not being able to meet your payroll or pay your AG's costs or whatever. So we really... That's one of the things that this committee looks seriously at is keeping that balanced. And again, the 6 month to 8 month is an appropriate guideline.
Okay. I do have those figures.
Okay, go ahead.
So for the Board of Licensed Professional Counselors and Therapists, it's $463,621. And for the Board of Psychologist Examiners, it's $243,153.
And how many months does that represent?
I need a calculator. It should be, I remember we worked really a lot with our accountants to make sure it came close to about 4 to 5 months.
Okay. That's minimal, but good. All right. Senator Roblin?
You took my question, because sweeping happens when these get out of balance.
Yeah. Seen it happen.
And Senator Monroe, I would also add that for this last biennium, for 2015, 17, I had to go before the e-board to request an additional $85,000 for the psychology board, just simply because our AG fees and the cost to try these cases was more than what we
thought. So you needed an additional expenditure limitation.
That's correct.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay. So we were getting off into the policy option packages.
Yep.
The first policy option package is number 100, which is what we're calling the budget merger. This is a companion to House Bill 2319. This policy option package assigns number 108 to the Mental Health Regulatory Agency. It then creates a subaccount 001 for the Counselors and Therapy Board and lifts BPE funds from Agency 122 and places them into 108 under a subaccount 002.
Okay. So POP 101, this is called budget balancing. This includes personnel changes, cost allocation, and the increased expense of co-locating the two boards' offices. We are requesting two FTE new permanent positions. This includes a 0.5 FTE administrative specialist two, which will be responsible for licensing, renewals, examinations, continuing education, and administrative support. It includes a 0.5 FTE office specialist two, which provides essential administrative support to other agency staff and management and is the frontline customer service representative. It also includes a 1.0 FTE office assistant two, which performs a variety of general clerical tasks to establish and maintain a paperless office and to support licensure and compliance documentation and archiving. We are also requesting 2.0 FTE limited duration positions, including one investigator two and one office specialist two, be reclassed or be put into permanent positions. Reclassifications include moving one investigator three to an investigator two position and making one of the investigator positions a lead worker. It also removes changes one of the two executive director positions into an operations policy analyst three.
And I can clarify the reclassification of the investigator three to a two. This past year we done a desk audit and found and we learned that the retired investigator was overclassed. So we're moving that back to its appropriate level.
Okay. So in most cases, what you're doing is you're asking that temporary positions that we approved last time be made permanent.
Correct.
And
Senator Roebling.
And an additional one over those.
An additional two.
Two. That's right. Okay.
Okay.
Okay. So moving on to POP 101. POP 101 also includes the renewal fee increase for counselor and licensors, counselor and therapist licensees from $125 to $165, and for interns from $80 to $120. These fees have not been increased for 15 years. The last increase, which occurred in 2002, raised fees by 56%. In comparison, BPE licensees pay $375 per year, and those fees will remain the same. This increase will inject a projected $320,600 into counselors and therapist board for 2017-19 revenues, resulting in 4.6 months of ending cash balance.
Okay. And again, it's been my experience that when we don't nudge the fees for 15 or 20 years, then we may have to increase them what looks like an awful lot. And it strikes me that it would be better, and the way I run my business is it'd be better to nudge them up gradually, just a little bit at a time, to keep it in that framework, that balanced framework that we talked about, rather than wait, and then all of a sudden you have to take a big jump.
Co-Chairman Rowe, I absolutely agree, and that's something that we'll look at doing moving forward. I have met with the Association for the Counselors and Therapist Board to talk about the fee increase. While no one is really happy about a fee increase, they don't intend to oppose this.
Okay, good. Madam Co-Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. If you would go back one slide, please. I just wanted to kind of throw out the idea that it's interesting the comparability between the psychologists and the licensed clinical therapists, because the psychologists, I understand, are doctoral level.
Correct.
And clinical psychology, the therapists are master's level. Mm-hmm. So that's part of the distinction in the fees. And at the same time, I don't want to overlook the fact that I'm pretty sure that the psychologist licensees probably have a much higher reimbursement rate than the therapist. So I just want to point out, I have some friends who are in the program who have been in the clinical therapist program, and it's a long, rigorous program. It's 3 years. It's, you know, there are thousands of hours of requirements from when you graduate after that 3 years before you can even become licensed, and they cannot get reimbursed by insurance companies until, so they have to run a private practice without being able to take anybody with insurance for the 2,400 hours or something it is before they can actually even get the license. Mm-hmm. So
thank you, Co-Chair Smith-Warner, for pointing that out.
Okay.
Okay, So from POP 102, for years, the budgeted amounts have fallen far below the actuals in the area of IT professional services and data processing. POP. Oh, I'm sorry. Where am I going? POP 102 is intended to fix this. This would add $49,664 to Board of Psychologists Examiners and $54,664 to Board of Licensed Professional Counselors and Therapists budget in these areas. The boards need to replace their outdated and dysfunctional databases with a new online multifunctional database. The proposed database is more secure and user-friendly and comes with new capabilities that will allow the agency to operate more efficiently. This includes new online applications and license renewals that will help to reduce staff processing times and avoid repetitive and manual data entry. New license and consumer ability to order and pay for information requests online is one of the capabilities, and improved interface and capabilities for application, renewal, and investigation data, resulting in enhanced customer service. Additionally, shared staff will no longer need to use two differently structured and varyingly functional databases.
I just want to also point out that with one of our boards, the psychologist examiners board, one of the databases that we're presently using is a 2003 Microsoft version. It's no longer supported.
Access.
And it would be a disaster if we lost that data. So continuing on, policy option package 103 applies to the Board of Psychologists Examiners. It's intended to align the budgeted figures with projected expenses in the area of professional services, which consists primarily of administrative hearings. Mm. This POP applies to only BPE. Based on an average 68% increase over the last biennia, the board expects $165,854 in actuals for 2017-19, when the current service level only provides $62,832 in funds. The difference is $183,022 and represents POP 103. And again, in this last biennium, I had to approach the e-board for an increase of $85,000.
The Board of Psychologists Examiners POP 104 intends to align the budgeted figures with projected expenses in the area of Attorney General's fees. Based on an average 8% increase over the last few biennia, the board expects $207,183 in actuals for 2017-19, when the current service level only provides $168,579 in funds. The difference is $38,604. Finally, POP 105 will catch the Board of Psychologists Examiners up with its projected expenses in the area of Oregon State Police criminal background checks. The board conducts background checks on all applicants for licensure. Over the past several biennia, the number of applications received has increased by an average 18%. This by far exceeds standard inflation, so naturally, the current service level does not keep up with the actuals. The board expects $23,847 in program-related services for 2017-19, when the current service level only provides $9,496 in funds. The difference is $14,351.
And again, refresh my memory, those background checks that the state police do cost about how much each?
Senator Monroe, they cost $40 right now.
Okay.
They adjust it when FBI changes their fees.
Yeah.
So
my memory was it wasn't a great amount. Madam Co-Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. And I was actually going to ask about that. I know that we have come across this in other boards as well. Has that been accounted for in the price of the initial application fee? Is that the theory of the having an initial application fee?
We keep those separate. So the cost of us processing the background check staff time is sort of absorbed in the application fee, whereas we keep the, it's basically like a pass-through, the $40. So when that changes, we don't have to adjust it in our rule.
Okay.
We just charge the actual charges that OSP and FBI charge.
You charge. Follow up.
Go ahead.
You charge to the applicant?
Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
I remember a few years ago when the requirement went into effect that they had to have those background checks, and that had an impact on a fee, and we had to explain to some members of the Ways and Means Committee that you know, that's not really an increase. It's because of the law that we passed that requires those background checks, and it just is a pass through that pays the state police for that action.
Mm-hmm. So this slide is really a summary of the four legislative bills that we have introduced this session. House Bill 2361 is the counselor education exemption bill. We're attempting to close a loophole for an education exemption which currently exists. 2319 is this one which creates the Mental Health Regulatory Agency. House Bill 2328 was a proposal for a board name change, going from the Board of Psychologists Examiners to the Oregon Board of Psychology. And then House Bill 2329 is on disciplinary cost assessments for the Psychologist Examiners Board. Presently, we don't have that ability to assess costs, and I believe we're about the only board that doesn't have that authority. We're being opposed by the association, so I don't know if we'll be able to get this through or not, but that's not surprising. But, when we go to $80,000 or $100,000 for a case, then we would like to be able to try to capture that, recapture it. So the conclusion, this governor's budget and House Bill 2319 constitute the board's plan for a permanent collaborative solution as requested. This comprehensive plan has been thoroughly researched and vetted through a transparent process, and we're hopeful that we will continue to receive support as we strive to achieve excellence in our service to Oregonians. We'd be happy to answer any further questions.
Are there additional questions for the witnesses? Okay, thank you very much. Are we going to hear from DAS now? Comments? Mr. Medina, go ahead.
Thank you, Co-Chair Monroe. Co-Chair Monroe, Co-Chair Smith-Warner, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Anthony Medina, and I'm an analyst in the Chief Financial Office. Today I'll be giving the governor's recommended budget for the Board of Counselors and Therapists and Psychologist Examiners. The agency has a few emerging issues. The first is the agency merge, which they discussed, the investigative backlog and complaints, and the need for an updated licensing database. The governor's budget maintains existing programs, supports continuing efforts to merge administrative functions of the boards, and makes targeted investments. Here's a graph representing the expenditure history for the agency as a whole. It assumes the merge in this graph. So from 13-15, there was no psychology examiners as well for 15-17. However, in 17-19, this graph represents the expenditure increase, however, breaks it down between psychology examiners and counselors and therapists to create a better representation. The increase in FTE is the positions that were in psychology examiners is reflected in that increase in FTE. Here's a graph explaining the expenditure history by category. The expenditures by category, sorry. And here's a representation of the revenue. The governor's budget supports current services and makes investments in the following. For the Board of Counselors and Therapists, it approves the budget balancing package, which includes a fee increase, the increase in staffing and the co-located facility, as well as the online database. For the Board of Psychology Examiners, the budget includes the budget balancing policy option package for both boards, which includes the staffing increase, the online database, and the expenditure limitation increase for administrative hearings, attorney general fees, and Oregon State Police background checks, as well as adjustments for the DAS price list and state government service charges. With that, I can answer any questions the committee might have.
Senator Roblin.
Thank you. So again, like many agencies, unlike many agencies, this one is not two-thirds for personnel. It's about 50-50, and that's in large part, again, extra costs for attorneys from the other agencies and the kind of pass-through money that goes for paying for fees like background checks and that kind of stuff, which is up. Would that be the main reason it's not a two-thirds?
Co-Chair Smith-Warner, Co-Chair Monroe, Senator Roblin, you are correct.
Okay.
He's always right. Any other additional questions for Mr. Medina, for Das? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Is there anybody else that wanted to be heard on Senate Bill 5513?
We can all stare at the one person out there.
Yeah, well, Representative McLean is here.
For Monday sit-in.
Observe. So we're going to have Mr. Wilson.
You're not going to stay and be in.
I'll watch on my screen.
Thanks a lot, Tim.
Thank you.
Mr. Wilson.
Give me a minute here to set up. I guess we'll figure out how to do it.
Do we need to get Anthony up there?
And this report will be found on
A week ago.
Yeah.
Okay, that's what I thought.
You can exit out of that if you like. Yeah, I'm out of it now. Let's see. How do I get the most
truth? And while he's trying to get that up, I will open an informational hearing.
Co-chair, Mr. Wilson, co-chair, members of the subcommittee, for the record, Doug Wilson, LFO staff.
With assistance from Julie.
Yes, thank you. some of us old folks that are not tech savvy to the extent that we should be.
I can relate to that.
From the last time, a week ago, we gave you a presentation of sort of the process, the mechanics, and then some statewide things. What I wanted to do today is to go right into the education program area and give you just sort of an overview there. A week from today, you will have the Chief Education Office and the three major agency heads, Lindsay Capps, who's Chief Education Officer, also the Policy Advisor to the Governor, Ben Cannon from HEC, and ODE Salam will be in to provide sort of a two or so day overview on education from their perspective, and then we'll dive in for the rest of the phase one into the various agencies under education, which are really only four agencies. It's we have a couple large agencies. From last time, though, there was a question, I believe, from Representative Lively of sort of what was the biennium to biennium increase, and this one will not be in your presentation from last week. I added it. It shows you biennium of what the increase and how much it changes from one biennium to another. This is general fund and lottery funds combined.
Representative Wisnett.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Mr. Wilson, you said that you didn't include ELC. Who looks at ELC's budget?
Early Learning Council is part of the Department of Education, Representative Wisnett.
We will be looking at this.
Yes, you will, for sure.
Thank you.
So this represents, as a foray into the next education program area, so we're talking about P through 20, including anywhere from early learning, from almost age zero in a couple cases, all the way to what is essentially 20 through the public university system, including grad schools. This should be slide
39.
39 on yours. It's 40 here because I added the other slide. It just shows the breakdown again by major program area. Education here represents just under half, and this now I'm talking current service level for 17-19. In comparison, the current service level for 15-17, the current biennium, or the current legislative approved budget, excuse me, is just over 51%. So it has decreased a little bit. You'll see that the state school fund represents the largest portion in terms of the parts of the budget for general fund and lottery funds. Health and Human Services is just under 30%. You can see the other portions of education and the other areas. Other than the big three, education, public safety, judiciary, and human services, and the current service level, general fund, lottery funds, all the other program areas, the legislature branch, the administration, natural resources, economic development, they only represent 5.6% of the budget. So the big three play a very large role. The next graph just shows you how this has changed over time. Again, this is general fund and lottery funds only. It changes over time. You see the effect of Measure 5 there in the starting in the 89-91 biennium and really starting the 91-93 biennium, where it has taken off. What has suffered as a result is post-secondary education, community colleges, and public universities, which is the green line, and all that other state spending, and that actually includes some education areas that don't meet either post-secondary or the state school fund, and that has dropped from just under 20% to about 10% over time as a proportion of the total general fund and other funds. What I forgot to mention on the last slide, that the state or the other education portion, that 4.3, includes the 2016 ballot measure. So when I talk about current service level, I am including the impacts of ballot measures 98 and 99, which total a little over $300 million. And between the two.
Question.
Senator Roblin.
So on that chart, it's...
Which one? This
and
one?
That one.
Yeah.
It's clear that education took off because of ballot measure 5 and 50, but human services went down and then has caught back up. I mean, the difference between the two is getting back to where it was back in 85, 87. So it's been growing actually faster than education for the last...
For the last few years.
Few years.
By any of that is definitely the case, Senator Roblin.
Yeah,
and okay. It's a major. They have a different set of costs.
Yes, they do. Yeah, I mean, federal government made a change in policy. Yeah.
Medical is part of that human
yeah.
services.
Oh yes,
yeah.
It is.
Yeah, absolutely.
It is probably the larger part of the two sides.
Yeah.
And this chart also back in during the recession years, 09-11 and 07-09. We had a large amount of stimulus funding, for a lack of a better term, or economic recovery funds that came in that were basically, I don't want to say free money from the feds, but we had a ability to move it around
one
the
time.
Budget. It was
the
all one time. I included this in chart. For example, we put about $103 million of federal funds in the Department of Corrections, and they never see anything close to the amount of federal funds. Again, as Representative Wisnett, that was one-time funding that we had to make up in the next few biennium. Taking a look at the program area again, this is current service level for 17-18.
Oh, it's a beware of Greek-sparing gifts kind of thing.
Yes. I start calling some of these graphs the Pac-Man graphs. If you guys are or members here are have played that game before. In fact, as a side note, I read in the paper that the inventor of Pac-Man died over the weekend, I believe.
Uh-huh.
So you see that general fund is by far the largest portion of this program area, representing over 80%. Lottery funds about 4%. You can see the other areas that fall into this. In the lottery funds, the largest portions in the state school fund. There's some in the Oregon Opportunity Grant and some post-secondary debt service. In the other funds, a lot of this is the Common School Fund, makes up about $110 million. That does flow through the state budget, but for the formula, it is a local revenue.
Representative Wisnett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Wilson, where's the state lands money? Is that showing?
That's the Common School Fund I was just talking about. It is a portion of that other funds of $271 million.
Not quite half of it.
Yeah. A little less than half of it.
Thank you.
Federal funds, a lot of that is in Department of Education for special education and other programs. There's also workforce development in HEC that goes out to the various workforce investment councils or whatever we're calling them on the local level.
So North. Head Start money would be in there because this is all education.
Mr. Chair, Senator Roblin, Head Start itself is not part of the state budget. It flows directly to the local providers. But Oregon Pre-K program, pre-kindergarten program, which is sort of a dual program, that does flow through the Department of Education budget and the Early Learning Council or Early Learning Division part of that budget.
Representative Wisnett.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Mr. Co-Chair, I've been working with Head Start people in Central Oregon, and they're really concerned, and that's why I'm glad we're going to look at the Early Learning Council, because the PK promise, which I'm learning about, they're concerned that the duplication that originally PK promised was going to take care of kids that were beyond the financial, and that's not occurring. And also then the people with the Head Start are upset that we have not signed an MOU between the federal government and Oregon about how we continue to get the Head Start money. There's an MOU, which I guess they've said we're going to do it, but they're not going to sign the agreement because we're still working on, and I don't know if Mr. Wilson knows about this, still working on trying to resolve whether the PK-12 can be used as our matching funds. I've given that to Chair Lively, who heads that committee, and I'm really concerned about that. We started a program which was supposed to supplement, but it's actually duplicating Head Start and in danger of Head Start losing funding, and that's PK-12 promise or whatever. It hasn't proved itself yet, and I think Head Start has, so we do want to be sure that we look at that. I would ask the co-chairs to we talk that with the chair of the ELC committee. Thank you.
Okay. Representative Parrish.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
I was just going to, I'll follow up on that. I had not heard that.
I'll get you some paperwork.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks. So to follow along on the Head Start question, so if our federal dollars for Head Start flow directly to them and there's no federal funds represented in that, are there any state funds in this pie chart that's represented by Head Start? And the reason I ask is we had Head Start Day, like first week of school, and I had two groups of Head Starts because I represent two counties came in, and their biggest concern, more so than how do federal funds flow, is on all of the employer mandate bills we keep passing, that they are not able to keep up with the increase in minimum wage. They are not able to keep up with sick leave. They're worried about paid family leave. And they asked us to sort of, how do you help hold them harmless for those roll-up costs if they're not getting any new funding? And they are really concerned that they are going to have to start cutting services to kiddos in our community. And, I certainly asked them, said, hey, can you put that down in writing so we can have that? But, when we look at how the things we do in this building have a consequence, I think most of us on this community, I know from just years past, new folks I haven't served with, but I think most of us I've talked to support Head Start. How much, if any, of that is state funds, and how, I think more philosophically for all of us, is how do we help them offset those growing cost increases that are coming from us and not coming from anything else that they're required to do federally?
Mr. Chair, Representative Parrish, again, there, if I'm getting your question right, there is no Head Start funds in this budget. It flows directly. There are Oregon Pre-K, which are very closely aligned programs. I think it's like $140 million. I'd have to go check the exact amount. of those. In terms of responding to various changes in law and mandates, and there's another complicating factor for child care providers and these kinds of providers with new federal standards for child care, which are a big issue, you'd have to set up a new program or try to channel it through the Oregon Pre-K program or whatever if you were going to keep up with the cost structure. And one of the issues with the preschool promise program, this new program that just started really in the past year, is its higher demand for wages in the sense that it mandates under law that the primary teacher is paid at the relatively the same, a comparable amount as a kindergarten teacher in the area, which is quite a bit above a preschool program pay range. So that's another issue when you get to that program you probably want to take a look at. It is making some of the providers concerned.
Yeah, Representative Lively.
Mr. Co-Chair, and I don't mean to debate, that's not my purpose here, but we are looking at all of those issues and understand even the pre-K promise, some of the contractors are Head Start that are providing that program. Yes, it was designed to be 100 to 200% above, and some of the students fall into that. But there's multiple contractors that the state has for that, and some of those, in some cases, are our Head Start. But we'll have a lot more information by the time we get to that, where that's at.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair.
Thank you. I promise we'll let you keep talking, Doug. The $74 million marijuana money, is that accounted for in this circle? And I'm sorry if you said that and I missed it.
Madam Co-Chair, it is not. It is a proposal in the governor's budget.
That's what
it is also contemplated in the co-chair's framework of putting basically offsetting general fund to the tune of $74 million.
Gotcha. But not currently in that circle, right?
Actually,
there.
If anything, it flows directly into the common fund under current law, common school fund, which then a small percentage, the investment earnings, that calculated 4% is going into the state school fund. So what the proposal is to not go to the common school fund, but directly into the state school fund.
Thank you.
The next one is a graph similar to what you're seeing for individual agencies of how the money is spent. By far, the most of the money, 94%, is paid out mainly to school districts, higher education or public universities, state school fund, and community colleges, and state or direct dollars to various individuals through the Oregon Opportunity Grant. So by far, these payments go out. Debt service represents the next largest share, 4%. That is mostly post-secondary, but there is a new program for K through 12 schools where there's a matching program, or not 50-50 match, but a matching program for districts that are building school facilities, eligible school facilities. That program got off the ground in the current biennium. A small amount, $150 million, which is 1%, is personal services or employee compensation, and a comparable amount, 1%, for services and supplies.
Senator Roblin.
So the money we loaned out on seismic improvements to school districts, is that debt service in there or not?
Mr. Chair, Senator Roblin, that really at this time runs to economic development.
Okay.
So it
That's
is not
thought.
Part of this area.
Representative Wisnick.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Mr. Wilson, the debt service, that's not including the debt service to school districts. That's the state debt service. On define the debt service that you're reporting there.
Mr. Chair, Representative Wisnick, this is the debt service that the state pays. So it accounts for the Q and G bonds that for public universities and community colleges pay for, these new school, the P bonds, which we'll get in more detail later on.
Thank you. That's
but it doesn't represent what public universities are paying for
our community,
what are called F bonds,
our community
or community colleges. These are only the state amounts. And
thank you, sir.
In terms of how the money is or where the money goes, you can see that over 75% in the education area of the $10.6 billion goes to the state school fund. Community colleges is about 6%. Support for public universities, 10%. There is a small amount of money, relatively small amount in terms of here, but over $100 million for OHSU, and that's divided into two areas. The program areas, the medical, nursing, dental schools, and some other smaller programs are about $77 million, and the remainder is debt service, as that will grow as the Knight Cancer Center, or whatever the official title for that is, starts to be roll out in terms of full construction. The Oregon Opportunity Grant is about 1%, and the Department of Education, primarily the various grant and aid programs, which I'll get to in a minute, represent about 6% of the entire education area. This graph, just because I can't make pie slices small enough, do not include the Chief Education Office or the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission, which actually does not have any general fund in it, the current service level.
And
Madam Co-Chair.
Thank you. And Doug, just briefly before you get off this, so the Oregon Promise, the Oregon Promise money would be where in this? Support for community colleges?
That would be in support for community colleges as
Thank
well
you.
As the debt service.
Thank you.
Is it a 10 or 40?
It is a relatively small amount in that amount.
Right.
It's about, it is $20 million because of the restrictions on the Promise.
Thank you.
I don't know how late you want to go. It is quarter two now. I can continue. I can come back whenever we have time.
Why don't we break here?
Okay.
And we'll have you come back.
Would suggest, Senator Monroe, for flexibility's sake, that you carry this item over till tomorrow. I will talk to the analysts with those licensing boards that are up, and if they get in, we can slide me in pieces.
And we will carry over the informational hearing until tomorrow, which is Valentine's Day. So anything else before we adjourn? Thank you very much. Thank you all for coming, and we are adjourned until tomorrow, the 14th of February. 14th of February.